Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Pastor Fred, and welcome to Perspective on the Bible. Today we'll be looking at two things in particular, but mainly the one which is in the news the most is the Pope's visit to England, especially his visit yesterday on Friday the 17th to London. In particular, we'll be looking at the Pope's visits to Westminster Hall and Westminster Abbey, and his comments there, and the significance of being in those places yesterday, very unique and very important events. And then, as God would give us the time, we're going to reapproach Mickey Gumbel's A Life Worth Living, if we have time for that. Thank you very much for tuning in. Let's begin with our opening music, and I'll be right back. Please stay with us. Hello, and welcome back. This is Pastor Fred. We're looking at the Pope's visits to Westminster in England. And I was very much thrilled with the events of yesterday. I cut myself up to watch EWTN, which was, sadly, the only network, at least that I could find, on the internet cable system, on the cable system, or on the broadcast system, that gave very much coverage at all. I mean, most of the media, completely, it seems to me, have ignored this event as not being important. And yet, I will submit to you just a few of the most obvious things. First of all, this is the first time a Roman Catholic Pope has been in England. So what are we saying here? This is a unique institution of Western civilization and culture, which is very important to 1 billion people, 1 billion people worldwide, and its spiritual leader has proposed to go to England. Now, when he proposed to England, there were all kinds of negatives. Don't come, don't speak, who do you think you are, we don't want you, etc., from a whole host of people. Then there was a tremendous amount of apathy on the part of other people. And a raging prequel was going on in England before His Holiness decided to continue, and he continued to come. He had been invited by Queen Elizabeth to come as the head of state. He is the head of the Vatican State, and he decided he was going to keep coming, even though his antagonists wanted him not to. But that all by itself speaks volumes to me about Pope Benedict. He might be a diminutive man in size, and we saw a lot of that yesterday because he has a lot of tall people around him. And when you see him among a bunch of tall people, you see that he's not very tall himself, which is, I didn't think of it. I never really thought of it, but I don't know what his height is. But it's an interesting little piece. I guess you could look it up on the internet and find out how tall is Pope Benedict. But he went in spite of antagonists, in spite of people who didn't want him, in spite of protests and the threat of protests, in spite of threats against him. Which means that he understands the nature of tyranny. He understands the nature of those who want to shut other people up and keep other people down and boot other people out and shove other people around. And he was not going to have that happen to him. Very interesting, a man in that sense, a little scrappy, I think, and to say the very least. And I get an impression that, I don't know, yesterday when I was watching Pope Benedict just do what he does, I got an impression of a pretty tough cookie underneath and a pretty scrappy guy. So, you know, the idea of a soft, calm, quiet scholar who's bookish and keeps himself in the ivory tower is not the image I got yesterday of Pope Benedict. I saw a man who's a scrapper, and he's out there to do battle. And he may, his chosen tools may be the tools of intellect and his tools of faith and religion. His weapons may be books, and his strategy may be philosophy and theology and rational conversation. But he's no less still, I was impressed with his courageous approach to England and to the beginning in Scotland. And we dealt with Scotland in the previous program. You can look at that through the archives. Now, when Pope Benedict was going to England, and thank you very much, I want to just say that right off the bat, to EWTN that did for all of us a great, great service in covering the Pope. And, you know, it's an interesting thing about EWTN. EWTN is a Eternal Word network, a global network, and television network, Eternal Word, EWTN, Eternal Word Television Network, excuse me. They were founded by a nun, a woman, and what does she count? And, you know, who cares about a woman who's a nun in the middle of Alabama, and she wants to have a global television network, and, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's what Mother Angelica faced years ago when she said, I'm going to found an international television network, and she did that. And she didn't have to be a priest, she didn't have to be a bishop, she didn't have to be a pope, she didn't have to be a man. She had to be a person with a vision and a person with the will of God behind her and a person who understood the will of God to be that she should do that, and then empowered by her faith and her tenacity. Mother Angelica and her sisters, we oftentimes want to give it all to Mother Angelica. Of course, it's Mother Angelica. Of course, there's no question about that. But Mother Angelica also was supported by a group of sisters who dedicated themselves to her and to Christ with her and to the church and to the work that she was going to perform. And so Mother Angelica and her sisters went out there to Alabama and they founded the Eternal Word Television Network. And let me tell you, it's a powerhouse for the Roman Catholic Church. And I believe it's a powerhouse for Christianity. And it's the one station, from my viewpoint, I know there's other Christian television networks on there, but I happen to be a Lutheran, so I find Eternal Word Television Network, EWTN, and under its present main speaker, Raymond Arroyo, in terms of the news, and then in terms of Father Pacwa and others, tremendous, tremendous place for the gospel and for the holding forth of the Christian message in a world that doesn't have much time for that. And when I say that, I've been looking on the internet every day for coverage of this significant event, which is to say that the Roman Catholic Pope of the Christian Church, Roman Catholic Christian Church, went to England, and not only to England, Scotland, and he went to Westminster Hall. Now, Westminster Hall, as it was very well pointed out to us yesterday on EWTN, was and is the place where Sir Thomas More was condemned to death for his loyalty to the Pope over his loyalty to the King. And others as well were condemned to death for their loyalty to the Pope as opposed to loyalty to the King. We're going to be talking a little bit about the painfulness of the Catholic-Anglican relationship after a break here. Let's just take a little break. I think it's a good thing. Maybe we can all just reflect a minute on the wonderfulness that's happened. But the going to Westminster Hall and then going to Westminster Abbey, two tremendously important and significant events that happened yesterday. Wonderful, wonderful events. And I think it would have been appropriate for the media to give us some coverage because personally, just to put it in a simple context, I believe, just as an individual, that this trip of the Pope is every bit as significant as any of the trips of his predecessor, John Paul. To me, it stands out there along with John Paul's trip to Poland. And like John Paul, who went to Poland in order to confront communism and the tyranny of communism and the materialism of communism, Pope Benedict, in a much quieter but no less courageous and a much more difficult situation, John Paul faced communism brusquely, I should say. He really did. He was quite a powerhouse of a guy. Well, this powerhouse of a guy, Pope Benedict, confronted materialism and secularism in England just as courageously, maybe quieter, and maybe even unnoticed by most. But I would suggest to you that yesterday's events were of momentous impact and momentous importance for the world. And I think they've already become events that have globally changed the dynamic of Christianity. Now we're talking about 1 billion Roman Catholics, but we're also talking about the numbers of Anglicans, millions and millions and hundreds of millions of Anglicans worldwide, and we're talking about all the Protestants. I think the Pope, in his actions yesterday, especially through his words and actions, has forever changed the Christian scene globally. So let's just take a moment here. And what we'll do is we'll just pick up a little bit of our beautiful music. I just love this particular song, as you know, and I want to play it for you. We're going to listen to it. It's "With All I Have, Jesus, I Adore You." It's a beautiful song. Let's just listen up, and then we'll come back. Please stay with us. Pastor Fred, thank you for staying with us. I'm sorry sometimes about the sound quality of that particular song. I don't know what it is. It might be the volume, but this is the. It's not a highly technologically produced show. So, anyway, we'll go back to the hope. Yesterday's events, much ignored by the media or downplayed, were significant from several viewpoints. One of the first ones being the very fact that it happened, that the Roman Catholic public, we know our history, the very thought of his predecessors coming to England, 500 years ago, it's just not happening. It's not going to happen. Popes didn't do that. And they might have fought some wars under Julius II and that type of thing, but I don't think too many. They might have gone to Avignon in France, but I don't think a pope has ever placed his feet on the soil of the United Kingdom before John Paul II, and most certainly now with Benedict the 16th. Secondly, the places that he went to. I think in England, when he went to Twickenham yesterday, and we talked about that, quite an amazing event when he talked to, at St. Mary's College, to the women educators, flanked as he was by the English hierarchy in many respects. He spoke to them as a Catholic school, St. Mary's College in Twickenham, and he told them many things, mainly don't just teach the facts. Education is for the formation of life. I think the Pope made a strong case for Catholic education and for the presence of Catholic education. And then he outlined the major thrust of that education. He doesn't get down into the weeds about, you know, whether you should do this textbook or that textbook. Being a Pope and being the leader of the Roman Catholic Church, he sets out the major policy, the major point, and which he just reiterated to Catholic educators, not only in England, you see. When the Pope talks, not talking to St. Mary's College in Twickenham, he's talking to all Catholic institutions globally. And when he talks to all Catholic institutions globally, he's talking to the world. Now, a little background to colleges, you know, is that these oftentimes came as a result of the Roman Catholic Church's response to the needy and the poor and the downtrodden who weren't getting education. Catholic colleges and parochial schools worldwide oftentimes were parish enterprises among the working classes and the economically deprived classes where you found a lot of Roman Catholic churches. Of course, there were rich churches too, but a great number of churches among the working poor and the people on the outside fringes of the society. Many of these colleges were founded and schools were founded, the parochial schools, in immigrant populations and within the societies in which they found themselves. In the United States, of course, we have the Irish, the Italians, the Poles, and the Spanish. There are so many different immigrant populations where Catholic education became a vehicle for success in the new land. And Pope Benedict recalled that and reiterated the importance of Catholic education, but he said it's not to give facts or just knowledge by itself, it's to give wisdom. And that wisdom's purpose is a reflection upon and the ability to reflect upon yourself, ability to understand the facts and also to analyze the facts, and ability to not only know information, but to use that information to become stronger and better and wiser. And the educator's basic thrust in the totality, he said, was to help those who are being educated to form a full life. And that full life included Christ at the center, Christ at the center. And the very, very big point of his whole entire Twickenham speech was Christ is to be the very center of Christian education in all areas of that education. And he also included that educators who are bringing about the modern Catholic intellectual from the earliest age must place the church in the center of Catholic education. And it's one of the big strengths of Roman Catholicism is that Christ and the church are not two and separate items. Now, they are seen as the same. Christ is in the church, the churches in Christ, and they are together. To attack the church is to attack Christ. To attack Christ is to attack the church. This community aspect, this common union between Christ and the church, is the church is the visible body, the practical body, the tangible body, and the Pope is its tangible head and its visible head, and it's, for all practical purposes, he is in the place of Christ, the vicar of Christ. And so with the Pope and with Roman Catholicism in general, you're not talking about a situation where you can deal with everything in the sky, you know, in your head, or just think about it, or in a book. It's a real practical reality that you confront every time you see a Roman Catholic church, every time you go to a Roman Catholic school. And so in Twickenham, he then went on to the students, and he encouraged them in a strong way to be courageous in their faith and the expression of their faith in the world as students. And he told them, you know, you're not just students for the sake of being students. You're much more than that. You're a people on the way of life's journey. You're in the process of formation of life yourselves. And he strongly encouraged them. I thought one of the most poignant parts of it was when he told them that they should not be afraid to be a lone voice, a lone voice. And, you know, reflecting back on my opening comments here on the program, Pope Benedict is not afraid to be a lone voice. And when we think of the words, you know, do not be afraid, we think of John Paul II. But we need to remember there, I think is an important piece of the pie, is that John Paul and his Grand Inquisitor, Cardinal Ratzinger, worked together. They were a team. They worked very, very closely with each other. And, you know, they used to joke about Cardinal Ratzinger as being the Pope's Rottweiler, in the office for the promotion of the faith, but and doctrine, or basically his job being watching over the doctrines of the church and the adherence to the doctrines of the church. But you know, everybody wants to juxtapose John Paul II from Cardinal Ratzinger. I think that's false. I think that if we look at it closely, we'll see that they were like a hand in a glove. John Paul may have been the glove, but the hand inside of the glove, I believe, was very much also Cardinal, the analogy for them, but Cardinal Ratzinger. And you only have to go and Google the words books by Pope Benedict XVI. You'll come up with two pages of books by His Holiness the Pope. It's quite an amazing array of books that you come across. And when you come across these books, you will be amazed at the numbers of books that he has written. And I have included some of them in our items here. It's quite an amazing number of books. You just can't amaze it. I'm not going to go through it right now. Here we go. Works of Benedict. Let me see if I can pull that up here on the computer. The Works of Benedict. Here, I got it right here. You know, it's under Ignatius Press. Ignatius Press is the publisher. I put three of them in front of us for this particular program, but I'm just going to read off the titles. It's quite an amazing number of books, and I'll go to the earliest books that we may not have known about, but that's one page. I'm already through one page. Now we're on the second page, and now we're going on to the third page of books by, it's a prolific writer, by Joseph Ratzinger, also known as Pope Benedict. Let me go here. We have Mary, The Church at Its Source, a book I read, a tremendously good book. I love that book. I think it's a very important book, and it gives us, along with Hans Urs von Balthasar, a tremendously important impact of Mary on the theology and thinking of Christianity. And we'll be talking with that. I'm going to go on there. Milestones, Memoirs of Cardinal Ratzinger from 1927 to 1977. The Legacy of John Paul II, Images and Memories. The Fellowship of Faith, another book I have read, a wonderful, wonderful book. I think it's the first one I read, which sets out a rationale. If you want to know who this very, very important man is, please read his writings. It's out there for all to see and all to read. There should be no secrets about Cardinal Ratzinger, and now Benedict XVI. Wonderful. I'm looking at his name here over and over again. Without Roots, a book I've highlighted for today's program. I haven't read it, but the scenario underneath it, he writes it together with Marcelo Pera, and it talks about the West, relativism, and Christianity and Islam. I believe that Raymond Arroyo mentioned that yesterday on his program, EWTN, as being potentially one of the key pieces of what's going on with the Pope in these days and as he views Western European civilization. The Ratzinger Report, exclusive interview on the state of the church, very interesting book. Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, Truth and Tolerance, wonderful book. I can tell you by the title, by reading Jesus of Nazareth that I did, that he does not see those two as mutually exclusive. You can hold 100% to the truth, and you can be 100% tolerant, and that's not impossible at all. God and the World, Introduction to Christianity, some of these I haven't read. The Spirit of the Liturgy, read that one, wonderful book, tremendously important viewpoints, and we know that as the Pope, he has asserted much of what he talks about in the Spirit of the Liturgy into his revisions of the Vatican II Liturgy. On the Way to Christ, The Nature and Mission of Theology, wonderful book. Principles of Christian Morality, Principles of Catholic Theology, The Meaning of Christian Brotherhood, a very small book. But well worth reading. I've read it at least twice, and then I lost it on an airplane. I put it in that pocket up there in the front of me, you know, and left. It was gone when I left. I forgot about it. I will go get myself another one. Gospels, Catechesis, and Catechism, Introduction to the Catechism of the Catholic Church, Call to Communion. Amazing numbers of books. The Feast of Faith, Co-Workers of the Truth, Daughter of Zion, Behold the Pierced One, Salt of the Earth, Values in a Time of Upheaval. See, we could go on, and I can't use every minute of this, but please, just do a Google search. Put down Works of Benedict XVI. Wonderful. And I've highlighted also Jesus of Nazareth, one of his latest books, I think, is a classic work. It must be in everyone's library. If you haven't read it, get it from the library. Go on to click it on here, buy it from Amazon.com. There's plenty of used copies of it. It's coming out with the second edition of that. I cannot tell you how excited I am about seeing the next works of the Pope, because especially Volume 2 of Jesus of Nazareth, which to me was a book of great faith, one that I found very, very exciting to read. Okay, yesterday when he went to the hall, Westminster Hall, Benedict confronted the society of England, and it's an amazing factor that his distractors would say it's unimportant that he was there, insignificant he was there. The Western press, especially the American press, very, very cursory treatment, AP News, every day that he was there running information about his apology for the apologies. I think he made one apology. I watched everything that he did on EWTN. He made the initial apology in the beginning, and that was that. But the news, quote-unquote, is supposed to report the news, and there was a lot of news about Pope Benedict, and all they did is they propagandized one part of that. It seems that AP and all the other so-called news services are trying to propagandize you and me. And I encourage you to read and listen to other programs than the news on the radio and the news on the television, so-called news, and the papers, and to try to get into BBC News, which is a much better news. You can speak German, Deutsche Welle, EWTN for sure in terms of religion. We today are not being served well by our so-called Reuters and Associated Press News, which give us nothing, just their own particular propaganda. which they want to put those dark-colored glasses on our eyes and blind us to all the truth. You would not know anything of the significance of this magnificent meeting if it wasn't for EWTN news and finding out the importance for Western civilization of what has happened when the Pope went to Westminster Hall. Now there, Westminster Hall, were previous prime ministers and present officials of the government of England. Of course, he had already met with Queen Elizabeth and made a very important speech there, and much of his speeches can be found on EWTN on the website. You can also go in to my website, which is BibleStudyForEveryone.com, BibleStudyForEveryone.com, where in the blog section I have included Dr. Moynihan's reports, daily reports about the trip of Pope Benedict, and he includes the verbatim speeches of the Pope and the verbatim speeches of the people who spoke to the Pope. So it's not only the Pope, but also the response to the Pope that's posted on the blog there on Bible-study-for-everyone.com, and you'll come up there. And if you're interested in my bio, you can find it there too. I have a bio on that particular blog for your interest. Pope Benedict speaking. Who would have gotten? Let's put it this way: Who would anybody get? I mean, if I sent the Lutheran guy Hansen to Europe, would anybody show up? No, nobody show up, and not even the Lutherans would show up. They don't care. You know, if I sent most of the leaders of the churches to Europe, would they show up? No, nobody show up. Maybe a few of their followers might show up, but nobody. The Pope went to England, and all of the Society of England, not only the Catholic Society, but the leaders of society, the leaders of government, the leaders of industry, the corporate leaders, and the leaders of institutions throughout the entire society, came to Westminster Hall, one, because it was the first and only time a pope had ever entered a Westminster Palace Hall in London, and also was the importance of the event. I think the leaders of all of these various parts of British society understood that this event, that the Roman Catholic Pope from Rome was in front of them in England, in Westminster Hall, speaking to them, was a momentous occasion. And they went to see it and to be participants of it, to be part of history, and also to listen to it, because they knew that what he had to say there, if he took the challenge of saying something meaningful, was going to be momentously important globally. And Pope Benedict did speak to them about the relativism of society, and he confronted them with the point that Western civilization and Christianity go hand in hand, and that the development of Western Christianity and Western civilization are one and the same, and that the influence of Christianity cannot be erased from the art, from the literature, from the music, and from the development of those. Whether it's the development of the notation system for Western music, from which we get the symphonic forms and all the rest, whether it's the inclusion of Greco-Roman philosophy into the theology of the Roman Catholic Church, or at that time the Christian Church, and we're going to talk about that for a second, into the Christian Church, and then from that the development of modern philosophies and the antagonists to Christian philosophy today, the educational systems of Western civilization in Europe are basically from the church, the university system, the library system, the hospital system, even the state system, the organization of the state system, only was able to be evolved from the fact that the Christian church perpetuated the Roman Empire's administrative structures into the early, middle, and late ages of European development, from which could even come. Modern states and countries and nations and the like more. The principles of democracy, the principles of individuality, the dignity of the person, the dedication to truth, the pursuit of scholarship. This was a monastic enterprise in so many ways, a missionary enterprise. That's why His Holiness was very quick to always call out, you know, the names of St. Ninian and St. Aidan and St. Cuthbert and the other great St. Augustine and St. Columba many others he called out, reminding Europe and reminding England that they are founded by Christian missionaries, and that their institutions, their cultural institutions, their educational, medical, scientific institutions, all the intellectual institutions, their corporate institutions, they owe their foundation to Christianity. And, but not only that they owe that, but that they cannot divorce themselves safely from their Christian foundations. And he basically was not only pleading, but he was warning that when you separate yourself from your first principles, when you separate yourself from your first love, when you separate yourself from your foundation, then you are adrift in a sea of relativism. And that relativism is a dictatorship, he said, a dictatorship that wants to expunge, to wipe out, to erase Christian influences within Western cultural society. And he spoke very strongly to that at Westminster. Then the Pope went on to Westminster Abbey, and we're just going to take a little break here while I look up a note or two. We'll listen to some music, Hope, Faith, and Courage by the Brothers of Faith. Great song. I just enjoy that song so much. But I want to talk a little bit about what the Pope had to say at Westminster Abbey. So let's listen to the music and stay with us. We have only about 10 minutes left, so please stay with us. Hello, and welcome back to the last 10 minutes of our program on the Pope and Westminster. And I want to just strongly emphasize the importance of what happened at Westminster when His Holiness responded to the invitation. Of course, he was the first Roman Catholic Pope to be in Westminster Hall. And I have from Dr. Moynihan a wonderful, this is the name of the thing is the Inside the Vatican. Inside the Vatican. It's a news magazine, wonderful, wonderful magazine. You can get it online, Inside the Vatican, Dr. Robert Moynihan. It's an excellent, excellent report of always giving us information and facts. And that's the beautiful thing I love about it is that this story from the Roman Catholic position is always factual, factual, factual. It's wonderful. And Pope Benedict confronted the fact of the Catholic tragedy of England. And I just want to take a minute just to remind ourselves. See, England was a Catholic, a Christian. I would go on to that whole thing. I just make a comment about that. Catholic is not synonymous with Christian. I don't agree with that. That's just not true. It's really Roman Catholic. And the idea that there's Catholics and there's the Christians is just absurd. Christians are Catholic, and Catholics and Christians, they go together. They cannot be separated. And you cannot take and tell me, for instance, a Lutheran, that I'm not a Christian and I'm not a Catholic. That's absurd. I'm not a Roman Catholic. And I find that offensive, actually. But I'll just go ahead and put that out there. Maybe some good Catholic person will call me up and on the blog and say, sorry about that, buddy. Maybe they'll say, I'm wrong. You're not a Christian. You're just a Lutheran, you know. Wrong, historically. But historically, England was divided at the time of Henry VIII when he left becoming he was the defender of the faith. He was given a title of great importance. He was seen as a superhero of Catholicism, who then turned against the Pope and turned against Catholicism and demanded that he become a Protestant or an Anglican. Now, basically, he never left the Roman Catholic faith, because he never left the Christian faith, but he left allegiance to the Pope, and he demanded allegiance to himself. And so ensued from that a division where the bishops, the Christian bishops loyal to the Pope, had to make a confrontation between their loyalty to the Pope and their loyalty to the king. And many of them did it because they didn't feel that their loyalty to Christ was tied into their loyalty to the Pope, and that they could be loyal to the king and be loyal to Christ, which I would suggest to you is still true. You do not have to be loyal to the Pope to be loyal to Christ. And I think that that would be true also in terms of Benedict when you ask him that question in that way. However, many others saw this as a new religion called Protestantism, and they fought against it. They said that, you know, loyalty to the Pope is the same as loyalty to Christ, and loyalty to Roman Catholicism is the same as loyalty to Christ, and therefore those people who are not going to do that are those who are loyal to the king are not really Christians, they're not really Catholics, therefore they must be non-Christians. And a whole big gigantic war came about from that, and a lot of people were killed, a lot of blood was shed. But remind yourself that it's Christians against Christians, Roman Catholics against Roman Catholics. Cardinal Wolsey and all these other good guys, whoever they may be and whatever names they had, and I don't know my English history that well, they were all Roman Catholics fighting Roman Catholics. Mary, Queen of Scots, against Elizabeth was a Roman Catholic against a Roman Catholic, in the sense that nothing has changed. The people have not died and come back to life as something new and different, and they haven't adopted a different religion. They just adopted a different head of the church. Very, very sad thing, and I think it's something that forever affects a sort of a schizophrenia. Somebody mentioned that EWTN, Raymond Arroyo show, but most certainly a profound sense of sadness within the English church that happened and that continues to happen, because I think, as the Pope rightly understood, the English church is a Christian church, and the Anglican church is a Christian church, faithful in so many ways to the Nicene Creed, the Apostolic Creed of the Apostles, and the Athanasian Creed, and the understandings of those creeds. However, the Pope, in addressing the crowd packed into Westminster Abbey, said that the Roman Catholic Church cannot, I want to get the exact quote from Dr. Moynihan, he said that the infidelity to the Lord's will, as expressed in that passage in St. Paul's letter to Timothy, we recognize that the Church is called to be inclusive, yet never at the expense of Christian truth. Herein lies the dilemma facing all who are genuinely committed the ecumenical journey. And the word here is yet never at the expense of Christian truth. So he's not saying to the Anglicans, you don't have Christian doctrine. He's not saying to the Anglicans, you don't believe in Jesus. He's not saying to the Anglican that your understanding of the Eucharist is wrong, or the understanding of the baptism is wrong, but your understanding of the church is wrong, and your understanding of truth is wrong. And in that sense, I think what you're talking about is a fidelity to the truth that the Pope said must be there. And in that way, I think he put the final nail into the coffin of ecumenical relationships in terms of church unity with Anglicanism worldwide. This is definitely something we have to talk about in future programs. But I think the Pope said, no, you have gone forward with the ordination of women, which is against what the Pope understands the nature of the church to be. You've gone ahead with the inclusion of homosexual priests, practicing homosexual bishops, women bishops, and you've gone through a whole series of decisions which are anti-life and pro the culture of death. And so we cannot sincerely tell you that we're going to, with any kind of fidelity, follow through a process of trying to be one with you. And I think he just stopped that right there and said, no, we're not going to do that. And it was a very, very poignant moment, probably overlooked by most people there, but this listener heard it very clearly. And with that, the Pope said his goodbyes to the Archbishop and in Dr. Moynihan's Vatican report, inside the Vatican, they have a wonderful picture of a very warm and sincere embrace between the Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury, and it's an embrace which you can see the two of them give to each other, man to man, a Christian to Christian, a leader to leader, which I interpret through my glasses as being a strong and affectionate goodbye, and filled with what I think the Pope would say, complete loyalty to the truth and complete loyalty to tolerance and complete loyalty to love, while not accepting that we can be in full organic communion, because we can't, relative to what you, the Anglicans, have decided to do. Now, we can debate that at some future program. I only have about a minute left. But I want to thank you for watching. And if you haven't watched any of the material that's on the EWTN, you can go on there, you can go online, ask a question about the Pope's visit to England. You have opportunity today and tomorrow to see some more of it and be witness of it and participate in it. Do so, because this is I'm sure it's going to go down, and your children are going to say, what were you doing when the Pope went to England? What were you doing when the Pope went to Westminster? What were you doing when the Pope went to the Abbey? Because I think it's of that significance. I want to thank you very much for joining in this program. We're going to have our ending here, Hope, Faith, and Courage by the Brothers of Faith, and looking forward to talking with you again soon. Bye for now.